This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Couric, and this is Next Question. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Once again, it's Katie Plus One. As you guys know, just to switch things up, I'm inviting a friend to co-host the podcast from time to time. And my date today is the one and only Kara Swisher. Now, Kara is the ultimate multi-hyphenate, as they say these days. Writer, podcaster, author, raconteur, stripper. Oh, sorry, you're not a stripper. Overall badass. So, Kara, thank you so much. We are both under the weather, so I think we need each other today. You've got a cold.
You sound better than I do. I sound terrible, and I had to do 4 podcasts today.
Oh, my God. How did you do it?
I didn't know we were dating. This is so exciting for me as a lesbian that we're finally admitting our deep and abiding affection and really lust for each other. It's fantastic.
Well, I am very happy to have you here because seriously, not to gush, you're one of my favorite people. You're one of the smartest people I know.
Thank you.
An incredible reporter. I think everyone in the business respects you so much, Kara, and you're really fearless, which is what I love about you. And, you know, I thought you'd be the perfect person to ride shotgun with me, although I can't imagine you're willing to give up the driver's seat. But we're going to be chatting with Kevin Systrom, who you know well. But before, I just want to give our listeners a little bit about us, Kara. How did we meet? I was trying to remember when I first met you.
When I broke the story about you going to Yahoo, I think.
Oh, is that when?
Yes.
But I was reading your stuff all the time. We sensed...
Because you were thinking about going to Yahoo. You had to, right?
Yeah. But so that was, I guess, in around 2012.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And who were you writing for back then?
My own thing, Recode.
That's right.
Recode, yeah.
And you were breaking stories right and left, including the one about me.
I was. And I thought it was intriguing. I thought it was super intriguing that someone like you, you'd been at all the broadcast networks. It was a big moment for people to make that crossover. You were one of the few and the early ones. Now, it didn't work out quite the way you wanted it to, but it still was pretty brave to do something like that and to try something out. And, you know, you kind of got snowed by Marissa Mayer.
I did. And I think in retrospect, not only was it a bad fit, because I don't think her goals and my goals aligned
right. In
terms of turning Yahoo into a really major digital news network. But, you know, I also think I might have been a bit too early, Kara.
Yeah, because you're not unlike what you're doing now with podcasting. You know, you were kind of doing, that's what you were kind of doing, but you did it in a more traditional sense, which was interviews and things like that. What was your title? It was so big. It was like Global News Anchor.
Yes, my husband made fun of me and said, why don't they call you Intergalactic News Anchor?
It was Global News Anchor.
It was a little much, but...
But it was early, and it was really important for people who didn't understand what was happening in news on the internet to have someone like you to go over. And very few people did that. You know, I'm trying to think. I think it was you and nobody else.
Yeah.
There were a couple, you know, but mostly what happened is later people that were on networks did podcasts or they did, you know, it's different things, but podcasts and newsletters, which was a bigger thing, or else they appeared as an influencer on TikTok or Instagram and stuff like that. And so you were early to all those things, as I recall. You were very early to Instagram. You were on Twitter early.
Yeah.
You were very embracing of the digital part. You didn't make fun of it the way most media people did.
Well, I think I saw early on, honestly, I think part from my own experience at CBS, you know, there was the decline of linear television. It was going steadily declining year over year. And I realized that, you know, in 2008, it was 2008 when the iPhone came out. I mean, that totally changed the game. And Kara, I remember being at CBS and having somebody say to me, I forget who he was. He goes, the future is mobile. But I remember thinking, what is he talking about? And he was so spot on. But whatever was going to happen, I knew something was changing. And meanwhile, you have been on the forefront of everything.
Well, mobile, you know, Walt and I called mobile web 2.0, I think. We were very, when we saw the iPhone and you know, Jobs had denied he was making it to us the year before he introduced it. No, I'm not working on a phone, but an interview. But the minute that happened, the iPhone changed everything, including, you know, for Kevin Systrom, you wouldn't have had Instagram. You wouldn't have had Uber. You wouldn't have had a lot of Airbnb. There's so much you wouldn't have without the app economy. And of course, that's when companies like this came into being, really, because of the iPhone.
It's amazing how much things have changed when you think about when we got into journalism and the things that have tanked as a result of the internet and things that have exploded. Well, you've got a lot going on in your life. I'm excited to have you back on this podcast when your new book comes out in 2024. It's called Burn Book, right?
You'll like it, Katie. You're in it.
Oh, God. I hope you're nice to me, Kara.
I am. And it's a low bar, though. It's a low bar for people in the internet. So.
Well, I know you're not a fan of a lot of people in Silicon Valley, but you are a fan of our guest, Kevin Systrom.
I am, very much so.
Well, let's let him in so you can talk about him and his ears can actually burn.
In person.
Kevin, hi.
How are you guys?
How are you?
Wonderful, thanks.
What a coincidence, Kevin. We were just talking about you. And I was saying to Kara, there are a lot of people in Silicon Valley she's not crazy about.
Yeah.
But one of the people she really, really likes, Kevin, is you. You're in rare company. Now, what is it about Kevin, Kara, that you like?
Well, you know, I really do admire, you know, there's a lot of people I had a lot of wrangling with like Steve Jobs, who I actually did like too. I like people who love products. I love people who have a design sense, have a real care about products and designing them correctly. I like someone who's thoughtful and is willing to change their minds. You know, Kevin was always open to criticism in a way that didn't, he wasn't hurt all the time.
And Kevin, I mean, it seems like you have a lot of humility, which is a quality that's probably hard to come by in Silicon Valley. How have you been able to maintain some openness, some humility as you've approached your work?
I was having dinner with a friend last night, and we were talking about Artifact and my current project and how it's going and the future of it. And I said, I think the difference between the people that succeed in the long run and the people that continue to fail are the people that do their best to recognize their blind spots, and that everyone has them. And the problem is, at least in Silicon Valley, that these companies grow to be so large that if you stay in charge, you can ignore your blind spots because you've got your moat, you've got your defense. And you can ignore all of the things you don't know about yourself because you're successful and you continue to be successful and you have all this money. The problem is, let's imagine you sell your company. You're no longer in charge of your company and you have to go face the real world. You have to get in touch with your failings and your weaknesses pretty quickly. Otherwise, you get chewed up and spit out the other side. That's what every entrepreneur has to do at some point in their life. The problem is the people that Kara is talking about, I believe, are the people who get to the point where they don't have to really think about those things because they're just riding the wave that they caused maybe 10 or 20 years ago. I don't have that wave anymore. You have to create a new wave. And in order to create that wave, I think you need to understand where you're good, where you're not good. And sometimes that can be a painful process.
Well, you know, Kevin, it's also a question of maturity, right? I split people between adults and toddlers, really. I don't know what else to say, is adult toddlers who get enabled and coddled. And you know this from having money. You don't know who's your friend. You have people in violent agreement with you almost all the time. And the ability to take feedback is very hard when everybody is enabling you not to do so. And I think it makes you a lesser executive, in my opinion. And you don't hear, let me tell you who you don't hear from about that, who doesn't complain when you have a thought about their product, is the people from Apple. You don't hear Tim Cook belly aching about anything because he's an adult. And so I think, I don't think you have to be old to be an adult. I think you were an adult from very early on. I mean, that was my feeling at the time.
I appreciate that.
Well, let's talk about early on, Kevin, because I know we have so much to cover, but I do want to start with Instagram just because I'm addicted to it. And I've been going down endless rabbit holes, much to my chagrin. I mean, constantly. It's really hard. It is addictive. But where did the idea from Instagram come from?
It came from, we were working on a different app, not Instagram, called Bourbon. And it was spelled B-U-R-B-N. And the name doesn't matter. It was funny, but it was a check-in app. It let you share your location. So you could say, I'm at a restaurant, I'm at a bar, and all your friends would see where you were. And it was kind of riding this wave of check-in app.
Foursquare was the popular.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Foursquare, Gowalla, Hot Potato. There were a bunch
Looped
of them.
Was Looped in there? Looped was
Looped,
it?
Looped, yep.
Yep.
Here's the thing. People forget that, maybe they don't forget, but it's easy to forget that we see these waves of like, everyone's doing generative AI all at once. Everyone's doing Web3. My version of that when I started was check-in apps. Everyone was doing check-in apps. And we started this check-in app. And the one feature that we had that no other check-in app had was the ability to add photos. And you can attach a photo to your check-in. So you could say, I'm at the beach. Here's me at the beach. And no one really liked our check-in app. No one really wanted to use it. I mean, we had a small group of people playing with it. And, you know, we took a step back. Mike Krieger and I, my co-founder, we took a step back and we said, why? And what is it about the thing we've built that people do love? So we crossed everything out. We had a whiteboard. We wrote everything that people used on the app up on the whiteboard. We crossed everything off. And we ended up basically with one thing circled, which was photos. We said, okay, what if we threw away literally everything about this app and repositioned it around photos? So we did that, but that's not the end of the story. A very quick addition to the story is we did that pivot. We built this app. We didn't call it Instagram yet. And I was I decided I needed a week off because I was exhausted. I was like, I don't think this pivot's going to work. So I'm going to go to Mexico for a week to a little seaside town with who would become my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, Nicole. And we were walking along the beach and I said, do you think you'll use this new version of this app called Bourbon that's photos only? And she said, no, I don't think I will because I don't like sharing my photos. My photos aren't good enough. I said, why aren't your photos good enough? And she said, well, because all your friends take these amazing, beautiful filtered photos. And I'm like, yeah, that's because they use filter apps. And she's like, well, you should probably add filters to the app. I said, that's a brilliant idea. So we finished that walk on the beach. I went back to the little hotel room we were staying in. And I researched how to make the first filter. And if you look way back on my profile, the first photo on my profile, the first photo ever on Instagram is a square photo of a very small dog in Mexico when we went out to lunch after I built the first filter on Instagram because of that walk on the beach.
Wow.
I'm proud to say she is now my wife and I love her dearly.
Well, did you pay her? Did you pay her for it?
I was going to say.
But I think.
I don't think we have.
She has a good prenup.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're both very, very happy with the situation. I'm very happy to be married to her. And we have this great life now. So it's awesome. But had we not gone on that walk?
I remember I was at Yahoo, you guys, when Instagram came out and somebody on my team says, you need to be on Instagram. You know, it's this great new thing. And I was like, what? But I kind of got into it pretty quickly. And it just grew so fast, Kevin, to the point you sold it to Mark Zuckerberg for $1 billion, which is a nice chunk of change.
Actually, Katie, it was cheap. He and I argued
really?
About this. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Mark Zuckerberg got the bargain of a century getting that fantastic.
Oh, you're right. I've read that. How much do you think you could have sold it for in retrospect, Kevin? Or do you hate that question?
I don't hate the question because I'm so used to getting it now. I think I hated it the first couple times, but now I feel like I've come to terms with my answer, which is at the time, do you know how many people, Katie, we had at the company when we sold it for $1 billion?
Seven, right?
Seven?
Maybe more.
It was nine, I think, maybe 9 or 10. So, Katie, imagine you have a group of kids in a room working on a photo app and someone comes along and says, how about $1 billion? you know, I don't know of many people that would turn that deal down.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, coulda, shoulda, woulda, had we stayed the course, been independent, I don't know. I mean, how many examples of people, maybe I know more of them personally, have turned down acquisition offers?
Facebook.
For $100 million. Well, you know, Facebook's the easy one. That's the one we all talk about. Let's talk about the ones that didn't work out.
Yeah, you're right.
Tons of them that turned down $100, $200 million offers saying, you know what, we're going to stick the course. And now you've literally never heard of these companies.
I think my point, Kevin, was that you were making something that was special and different. Having seen everything, I think they did help you grow quickly, I suspect you could have done it by yourselves because your product was quite magical in a way that not a lot of them are. How much do you imagine they helped you grow? I don't think I've ever asked you that. How much do you think they, being within the juggernaut of Facebook, which was at that moment, still is really, did you think they really did help you? I assume you did.
I think they helped us in a bunch of ways and we helped them back in a bunch of ways. And there's a little bit of this dynamic of we and them, which I find so strange, by the way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, sure, we had a little building on campus and it had a little Instagram logo on the outside, but we were all part of the same company. And I'm bringing this up not to point out the way you're talking about us, but rather the way we talked about ourselves internally when I was there. It was such an us versus them dynamic. And it was very strange in my head always because I was like, here we are, now producing billions of dollars years in, billions of dollars. But it's as if we're like two siblings fighting over who gets the remote. And we're not.
Well, it sounded like that to me, though, Kevin, because everything I read, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Mark Zuckerberg was kind of threatened by you and your success and the fact that a lot of resources were going to Instagram. And I don't know, it sounds like his ego got in the way. Is that accurate?
I don't know that I can speak on his behalf for that. You'd have to ask him directly.
I mean, is that how you felt?
The way that I felt was that nothing made sense logically about the way we were running the two companies. Logically, it was amazing that we had lightning in a bottle and we were producing, you know, a product that was growing all over the world and, you know, double digit growth rates per month. And then on top of that, producing billions of dollars. Yet for some reason, internally, the dynamic was that we were disappointed.
Yeah.
And that was very strange. And I, like, basically the reason I left, by the way, and I've said this to friends and I'm not sure I've ever said it to anyone else, but like the reason I left is because the more I felt that I put in and the more that we won, the harder my job got. The more difficult, the more, and not that like, not that jobs don't get harder as things go on, but it wasn't like that success was a good thing. It was almost as if that success was a bad thing because we had this product, Facebook Blue, which was going through some tough times. And I get that. And I probably, you know, could have been a better, you know, I don't know, sibling or whatever in terms of understanding how challenging that must be for those people and for those teams and for the brand. At the same time, I found it so strange that we didn't look at our situation as, holy crap, we are the luckiest people on earth and maybe the luckiest company on earth. That feels like a real tragedy in retrospect.
Yeah. Well, I read that you were on, I guess, doing some interviews and Mark and Cheryl said basically you couldn't do interviews without getting permission from them. So it does sound like a bit of a power struggle. What's your take on that, Kara?
I think they were jealous of, I know they were jealous of Kevin, largely because of creativity and this, and the knock on them was that they stole ideas, that they were shoplifters essentially of other people's theories and ideas. Now, as it turned out, Instagram became an enormous engine for Facebook as Facebook started to wane in usage, in excitement, in young people being, especially young people. It was critical. To me, there are certain purchases in technology that are critical, that really changed them. I think Google buying YouTube was one of them. And I think there are certain purchases where it's a real turning point. I think it was in a critical thing. And it's sort of, as rich and famous as you get, it doesn't matter if it wasn't you who did it. And I think Bill Gates suffered from this, you know, probably more towards Steve Jobs is like, Bill Gates, before he did all the philanthropy, if he had died then, it would have been the world's richest man died today. And if Steve Jobs died, which he later did, the world's greatest tech visionary died today. And I think Kevin was more in the visionary part of that. And Mark, you know, he's like a Henry Ford character. And so that's what makes it hard. And again, I'd love to ask you, getting back to the product, and that's really what you have to get to, is the product itself and the iterations you make around it, including, as I've talked with Kevin about, doing stories. That was a Snapchat thing that then Instagram did. Now, Kevin, quite smartly and very cleverly, has said to me, well, they made a radio in a car, and we just made a better radio in a car. And I kind of accept that now. I accept that now, Kevin.
It's funny, by the way, Kara, for a second, that you, I don't know, you'll say that Facebook are shoplifters. But like, to be clear, Story was a very direct, you know, it wasn't a replica, because I think we added some really neat features to it.
You did.
But I do believe that, like, you know, as much as Facebook might have invented the Facebook news feed.
Yes.
Now you can't see a social product without a news feed. But that wasn't a given back then.
That's true.
So these things are not property of the founder. Yeah. It's about who executes best on them. And now we're seeing that play out with the Twitter feed effectively across multiple products.
Yeah. Everyone's doing a version of Twitter, including you and your new product, you know, a version of. But the idea of it is a feed, isn't it? It really is a feed when you think about it. But one of the things that I think is important to remember is that not just from a creative point of view, it gave Facebook an enormous amount of credibility to own a product like this. It also was financially enormous, like enormous, and a safer place than what was going on at Facebook. And I think that was really important, a pleasant place. Facebook had started to get different, right, as they got criticized. But Instagram, even though there are lots of problems on Instagram around lots of problems, you know, it still was a place of a product of enjoyment, I guess. I don't know how else to put it, but a product of enjoyment more than anything else, and delight. And I think that's hard to do and sustain. Twitter has never been enjoyable. It's been funny. It's been vexing. It's been addictive. But enjoying? I don't think so. I don't, you know, I guess in a broader sense. And that's very hard to do.
After this break, we dive into how tech companies can build products that select for something other than outrage. Kevin has some great ideas on how to do just that. If you want to get smarter every morning with a breakdown of the news and fascinating takes on health and wellness and pop culture, sign up for our daily newsletter, Wake Up Call, by going to katiekurek.com.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand-washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.
And we're back with our guest, Kevin Systrom, and my co-pilot, Kara Swisher. I wanted to ask you about the negative side of Instagram, Kevin. Obviously, there are a lot of negative impacts on girls, on mental health, on the comparison that it encourages. And is that just part of the deal? I mean, can anything be done about the psychosocial impact of some of these platforms, and specifically Instagram? And as you saw it having this impact, I'm curious what went through your mind.
I think it all comes down to leadership. The idea that you have a tool And that tool, take nuclear energy, can be used for amazing things. It can produce clean, sustainable energy, but also, if used not in the right way, can create massive destruction. Tools themselves rarely have a very clear positive or negative effect. It's when you put that tool in someone's hand and that person decides to start making rules around it and judgments about what's allowed, what's not allowed, the way they decide to moderate things, their community guidelines, the tone they set as a leader with their own posts, if we're talking social media. And as a leader at Instagram early on, I decided that we should focus on being the nicest place on the internet. And nice is like a really lame word, but let's move past that to maybe kindness. So for instance, we were one of the first, if not the first major social network to use machine learning to detect bullying and intervene in bullying situations. Most people were worried about spam at this point. So if you went to any other network, they'd have spam filters and spam detectors. And we were focused on interactions that didn't qualify as spam, but were human-to-human interactions that were negative. And we would intervene and try to stop those things. Those are the types of decisions that I think made Instagram such a great place early on, because we used to have this phrase internally called prune the trolls.
Yeah.
And we used to just get rid of, we just block accounts of people who were causing issues very, very early on. And that was getting rid of the negative. But then we would also host these community meetups called InstaMeets. And we would bring together people on the platform in person, in a park, to meet each other, to put a face to a name. And those types of interactions very early on, I think, set an amazing tone for the community that lasted well beyond my tenure. But as you get bigger and bigger and you get into the billions, the law of large numbers says that you get just about everyone on the platform, every type of person. So it becomes much harder to make these decisions. So maybe in one country, something is well accepted, while in another country, it's not accepted. And you have to make these really hard choices about what's allowed and what's not allowed. And you start to make people angry with these choices, but it all comes down to leadership. It all comes down to those fundamental decisions you make as a human holding that tool in your hand with the control.
Which I think is lost for a lot of people. A lot of tech people try to abrogate. I don't want to have anything to do, even as they built it. Like, I didn't mean to build this city.
Right. Well, we're a platform. We're not a publisher, right?
Yeah, but they built it in the first place. And I think one of the things that's important, and Kevin can talk to this about his new thing, is you have to have a set of rules. And it's okay. You know, this whole canard that it's a public square, it's not a public anything. It's a private money-making company. I mean, I don't know, Kevin, I think that. I think these are companies. And, you know, company has its rules, and so should this.
Are there any things that you see, Kevin, when you go on Instagram today that you wish wasn't happening, or changes you think, oh, I'm so pissed they're letting this happen, or if I were there, I would do X, Y, or Z?
At the end of the day, the question is how you incentivize people and who's in control. And I think what we've seen, so you asked, you know, what do I wish was different? You know, I'm not sure it's an Instagram problem specifically, but, you know, products like Reels and product like YouTube Shorts or even TikTok, they're so optimized on engagement that they will show you things that you are not actually interested in, but they will make you stare at them forever. And then you wake up one day and you look around, you go, God, I just spent an hour. Was that like a useful hour of my life?
Right.
And part of why I started Artifact was the belief that you could use some of the same technology to personalize, but do it in a way that actually showed people things that made their life more informed, maybe a little bit better.
Kevin's talking a little bit, if you want to make an analogy, to sugar, right? Isn't this donut delicious? What a delicious donut. You may even not want it. You may want something healthy, or you might want something different, but it's hard to resist.
But it's sitting in front of you.
Well, it's how you architect things. And, you know, Kevin's a designer. If you architect for virality and speed, you're going to get a different thing than if you architect for context and content, like really good, what you're looking for, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's a question of what architecture you put into place. And so many of these things, or else you don't put anything into place, and people generally trend towards shitty stuff. Look at the shitty stuff. Look at the accident. That's what's going on Twitter right now. He's just removed everything. And so people who are bad players can come in and really attract you in a way. It's just the human brain. It crawls down your cerebral cortex, really.
Kara, I have an example.
Sure.
I love coffee, okay? And I do go to Starbucks. And by the way, like, you know, people who... I claim I'm a coffee nerd, and then I tell people I go to Starbucks, and they're like, wait, what? But like, I do.
I'm surprised you went to Starbucks. I'm surprised.
Listen, I'm a busy guy with like two kids. Sometimes you need a great, quick coffee.
He's kind of a coffee snob. You are a coffee. You were.
Here's the thing. I've been going to Starbucks for God knows how many years. And Starbucks is a milkshake company, guys. It's a milkshake company. Go into any Starbucks and just sit there and watch people ordering. They're not ordering drip coffees. Maybe once in a while a latte. People walk out of there with huge milkshakes with whipped cream on top. And yes, there's caffeine inside. But think about what machine produced, what set of incentives produced that milkshake shop. It's like, well, okay, people like our coffee, but like, how can we have them have coffee during the day, not the morning? Well, let's blend up some ice with it. Let's add some sugar. What do people like? Oh, okay, we'll do summer drinks. And before you know it, like one of the most original coffee companies in the world now like primarily sells milkshakes.
Right.
And if you think about it in terms of social media, that's exactly what happens. You start off about being this Times Square and ideas and everything. And then you say, oh, well, actually, what gets people to stay around? And what you end up with is like fight videos and car crashes and silly animal dances and like...
And dunking and not new. But I would argue, though, that news is important, that people are still on Twitter because news is there. It's the best place to get the most up-to-minute news because the people on it. So you can move people towards quality things very easily, even if you can sort of do this with the jazz hands with the milkshake, I think.
I want to be clear that like, I still love Starbucks. I still go there. It's just, you got to look at what incentives produce at the end of the day in your business. What do they produce? And if you chase profit, if you chase margin, if you chase expansion, you will get to a point where what you end up with are products that are purely engineered for that rather than maybe the original mission.
But like, I'm curious, Kevin, with Artifact, explain what it is for people who don't know. And also, you're going in a much more vegetable direction, really. You're going for full vegetable or full news junkie, essentially.
I'll challenge that we're going full vegetable, but I'll get there first by explaining what it is. Artifact is a fully machine learning driven personalized news reader. So the idea is that you show up and we're going to show you a bunch of things because you told us you're interested in technology, in NFL and cars. We're interested in fashion and you're from San Francisco. And we will crawl the internet. Not the entire internet, but what we deem as the trustworthy internet. And we'll bring all that content together and then we'll serve it to you in a feed. And depending on what you tap on and what you engage with, we'll try to learn what your actual interests are. And then we'll customize that feed over time. So what's happened for me personally is when it started, it was just a bunch of tech news. And now it's a mix of Japanese architecture and travel recommendations, parenting tips, because I have two young kids. And local San Francisco politics. And that's great for me. It's a mix of wonderful publications that I never would have heard of otherwise and helped me discover local publications like the San Francisco Standard. Things like this bring content to you rather than having you get served content because someone decided to post about it.
Or searching for it across a million different platforms. But Apple News does the same for me, Kevin. How is this different?
I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound like a non-answer, but you have to see it to know the difference. Like my pitch would be that we focus on high quality, non-trashy publications that aren't so intellectual that they feel out of touch, but that aren't like kind of the, you know, content mills that just show you more celebrity photos. And that it's like, thank you. Someone finally built a news recommendation service that understands me as someone who is, and when I say me, I mean someone who loves tech, who loves things that are on the bleeding edge, wants to learn about AI, maybe they have a budding interest in crypto, like those types of things. It's like we go beyond just the major publications too. We find interesting Substacks. We find interesting recipe authors. So you're not going to find that on a place like Apple News. You're not going to find that on Google News. And that's okay because they're focused on different things. But I think we go a little bit more intellectual and we go a little deeper in terms of unique sources. And then on top of that, the competitive angle, I do believe our machine learning is better than a bunch of these. So we will personalize better for you, or at least that's our goal. So that's how we're different.
You named four areas you're interested in. You know, you said local San Francisco politics, parenting articles, Japanese architecture, and I forget the fourth one. What was the fourth one, Kevin?
I don't remember.
I don't either. But what about like someone like me, and Kara, I imagine you're like me. I'm interested in probably 25 different things. You know, I'm a generalist. I want to know what's happening from Meghan and Harry to Tom Friedman's latest column about the Middle East, to what Richard Haass might have written in Foreign Affairs, to what The Economist is saying about Israel, to everything, to how it'll affect you. I mean, obviously, I'm heavy on foreign policy right now, given everything that's going on in the world. But how can you serve me up over such a broad area of interests, things that I want to see, without completely overwhelming me?
There are a couple ways. The first thing that I think is really interesting to talk about here is you just discussed revealed versus stated preferences. And if we ask you to name all your preferences and we put a piece of paper in front of you, for most people, that's actually very, very difficult. It's very hard to say all the things that you love without seeing them. But if a system learns, and this is called exploration in the machine learning verbiage, if you can explore potential topics for someone, and then just note, Katie spent a bunch of time on foreign affairs. She loves Thomas Friedman. Whenever Thomas Friedman writes, she spends a bunch of time reading this article. But she also loves like the latest Harry and Meghan gossip. Those things are not mutually exclusive, but they are on major publications. When you open up a major publication, you have sections. You have the front page. Harry and Meghan are not on the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post most of the time, probably ever. But for you, maybe they should be. And that's really the dream here, is that via exploration, we can make that front page sing for you, that it can feel like it was designed literally just for you.
Which has been an old goal of everybody. Yahoo, you had personalization. Everyone's tried to sort of create this individualized newsfeed for everyone. That's sort of been a long time goal.
Yeah. And maybe what I could do quickly is just talk about where we've expanded recently, because the scope of the company has changed pretty significantly. And that's some of what Kara was talking about when she said we're building our own little Twitter. We've always believed that we wanted to build this personalized homepage for you, that other people have tried and not done it very well. One of the realizations through this, I believe, is that it's not that it's necessarily hard to do. It's that I'm not sure people are that impressed. Not necessarily with us, but just they need more. They need more than articles. They want spice. They want unique, interesting content. And where that typically comes from is user-generated content. When people actually post something that they're thinking that's unique, that you can't find anywhere else. So we added this thing, this tab called links, which now will let you, it lets you post links to things that you find interesting and say something about them, which could be not from a major publication. It could be a random blog that you found, or maybe your own blog. But it also lets you post just on your own. So if you want to write four or five paragraphs about something, you can and post into it. And this feed has been really fun to watch take off in the last few weeks. It's really added a different life to Artifact. So now you can get your news, which is fine, but you can get it at other places. But now you have these really unique posts and links that you can get basically only on Artifact on this other tab. But it's all part of discovering content using personalization. That's the dream here, is that we can create this market where producers and consumers can get matched and their interests are matched.
So interest matching, there used to be a company called Six Degrees. You remember them?
Yeah.
Amazon ended up buying them. And the idea of putting interests together has always been another dream. And what's happened is it's degenerated into chaos, which is whatever bubbles up in terms of enragement is what wins, versus, because it's like a traffic accident, versus your interests. One of the reasons TikTok is so successful, it does see your interests and it knows what you like. And it, you know, that's more media than social, right? And so the goal is to be more media than social, because social has become so toxic in a lot of ways. And that's what's difficult about these businesses.
When we come back, what in the world is coming next for news and media online? Kevin and Kara have some ideas, and there's real reason to be optimistic.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, stay connected wherever you go and transform your vehicle into a dependable Wi-Fi hotspot. Powering applications like real-time GPS and voice assistant, navigation becomes a breeze. Even on the practice field, AT&T in-car Wi-Fi keeps you connected while in proximity of your vehicle. Work, stream shows, or finish homework without missing a beat. See if you're eligible for a free trial at att.com/in-car Wi-Fi. Don't let connectivity be a roadblock in your journey. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use when vehicle is in operation, compatible device and vehicle required.
We're back with Kara Swisher and Kevin Systrom. How is business, Kevin? I mean, are you doing well? How are you getting people to download yet another app and want to kind of change their habits?
I think like what we've done is create a beautiful product for some very passionate people, but nowhere near the amount of people that use Instagram, right? And the question is, how do you go from one to the other? Because Instagram started off very small at the beginning. I mean, everyone likes to think, oh, it was this overnight success. And don't get me wrong, the first day of Instagram, we had 25,000 people sign up and it was great. And it continued to grow over time and it retained people. The question is not, can you get attention? The question is, can you retain people with a product that they love? And we have a group of people that love this product. And our main challenge is, can we be mainstream? And where's the white space? Where can people succeed? Because, I mean, Kara, what's the last successful consumer startup you have seen? I'm curious.
There hasn't been.
In a long time, right?
Not by a big company. It's been a long time someone's broken through, right? It's been a long time. I can't think of one. You're very good. And also, it also has the law of big numbers is that, you know, this is something Ben Horowitz, of all people, said to me. He's like, no one's going to create a search engine. No one's going to create a consumer commerce company because of Amazon, search engine because of Google. No one's going to create all these various things because of the large players. And that's the real problem is how do you even break through? Now, the one example is, I got to say, TikTok, right? Came out of nowhere.
I'll challenge, okay. Which is, I think it's very easy as someone who, maybe I was 25 at the time, something like that, Instagram started. It's very easy to be optimistic and green and just believe there's all this opportunity. And then it's very easy now on the other side. I'm about to turn 40. I'm 39 right now, to believe that there's no opportunity or believe that maybe some doors have closed along the way. But here's the wonderful thing about the internet, that it surprises everyone. I mean, when we founded Instagram, could you imagine that anyone would be able to found an image sharing social network to compete with Instagram? And then Snap came along. And then after Snap, could you believe anyone could compete with YouTube, Instagram, and Snap in video? And by the way, not even a US company? Like, this is incredible. Like, of course, there are always opportunities. So what you have to do, I think, in these situations is fight the urge to believe that all the doors have closed.
Right.
And instead look out and say, what are the opportunities that have changed because of some fundamental technology change? Like, for instance, generative AI.
Oh, that's full of ideas because there's going to be generative AI for insurance, for healthcare, all kinds of areas. So you can, it reminds me a little bit of when the mobile phone came, right? That you couldn't have imagined Instagram before the mobile phone, could you? Easily.
No, most people, when they see companies start, think, that idea is too small.
Yeah, it's true.
And the question isn't, is the idea too small at the beginning? It's what is the ambition of the person who's running it and what direction are they headed? Because if you can map out that Mark is going to take it from Harvard to other Ivy League schools, to every school, to every other college, to high schools, et cetera, and then take over the world, like then you say, okay, this is interesting. But I don't know. There are a lot of companies that get started and stay very happy with very small audiences. So it's not about the idea, it's about the direction.
I want to just spend a couple of minutes talking about the media landscape and the state of news, which is what prompted you to create Artifact, Kevin, in the first place. And I'd love to get your take on what is happening on Twitter now, or X, and what Elon Musk has done to turn it into such a cesspool. Obviously, people can buy blue checks, so nobody is really verified. The ad model has changed. There's AI, I think, that's creating a lot of dis and misinformation. But I'd love to ask you, Kara, what has X become and why?
Well, it's interesting because it's still a little necessary because it's so everyone's there and it's frantic. You know what I mean? And so if there's like if there's
I still go on it. I do.
Sure. It's useful. It's because everybody's there. But it's sort of like one of those clubs or a place, a downtown that, you know, you still have to kind of go to, but it sucks now. It's like it's dirtier. There's really weird people hanging around.
No one says that about San Francisco. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
No. I love San Francisco. Don't insult San Francisco to Kara Swisher. So I find it really hard to use. I have to turn off comments now because of the flood of really crazy people. And I'm joking about Elon Musk, but he also, you know, is really unpleasant. And so it's become an unpleasant experience, but you put up with it because of the benefits of getting instant, like there's no other place to go right now to watch the vote happening.
And didn't he fire everybody who was kind of evaluating content and flagging content?
A lot. Well, they say not everybody.
And then I keep getting these ads, what doctors don't want you to do to your coffee. Like, why do they keep why do they keep feeding me that ad?
Because they're paying, because the check is cashing. I don't know. I think it could go for a while. These things can go for a while. Kevin knows that. These things can hold on. And he's the richest man in the world, so he can afford it. It's like having one of these mega yachts that's seeping oil out of it. He can keep doing it and paying the fines for it for a long time.
What was frustrating to you, Kevin, about the news environment? And how did you say, I need to fix this or I need to fill a hole that's missing?
I want to be clear that I think Artifact is much more than just news. Like, of course, we're in the news category in the App Store, and that's the easiest way to talk about what we are. But I think my frustration actually is that people only think about news when you talk about news. They don't think about all the amazing content out there that has nothing to do with the day's headlines.
We should probably call it a content app, really.
Yeah, that's right. And I think people are thirsty for that type of information because they don't want yet another if it bleeds, it leads story. What they want is some value in their life. A discovery, like there's this guy who just documented his trip throughout Japan in a photo essay. And I found it on Artifact. And it was this moment where I've been to Japan only a few times. It's one of my favorite places on earth. But I scrolled through and I was just like, okay, I'm taken back. And I'm not reading about some awful thing that happened in downtown San Francisco today. Because I can get that elsewhere. That's the opportunity. It's not necessarily the news industry, but rather, what are people reading? What are people being served? And why? And if you focus on these platforms that focus on the most insane stories being pushed to you, you're just going to get that type of content I said I wanted to avoid. So the real opportunity here is, can you learn someone's interests and can you delight them with content that doesn't make them want to shut the app in anger every single day?
I think the word delight you're using is absolutely the case. I mean, that's why I do have a good feeling about Threads. I find it delightful sometimes. I was laughing at it the other day. They have some astronomy person, right, on there. I'm not interested in astronomy, but I love it. And I don't know why, or they had a video that made me laugh, or cat videos or whatever. And on Artifact just now, stuff I wouldn't have found, like there's a piece that someone else discovered that then showed me, which was, when was the last time Mark Andreessen talked to a poor person? It made me laugh. I was like, probably never, you know, since he was a kid, essentially, when he was poor. And that's the kind of thing you need. I think if there's a trend, Kevin, maybe you could answer this. There's a trend toward getting sick of crap. Like, everyone is sick of crap. And I do think there is a trend towards, and I think it's the same with voters. They don't want to hear anymore from screaming people, screaming angry people. They want to hear about things they like, about their family. And I think that's kind of a secret, silent majority of people being delighted by things or discovering things that are of interest to them, even if they're hard stories or whatever.
But do you think they want to hear things that are not so partisan too? I mean,
anything.
You know, I'm desperate to actually have someone explain to me what is going on with this committee that's investigating Joe Biden and claiming that his family has made $10 million in you know, it's on some right-wing news site that I actually get their newsletter because I want to hear what they're saying. But I sent it to a friend and I said, I'm so confused. Is any of this actually true? Right?
Yeah.
I think verifying information is really hard today. You never know who to trust, even with large publications. You don't know if there's some ulterior motive or partisan angle. And I think one of the reasons why I'm excited about Artifact and the algorithmic approach is there's all these new advancements in balancing perspectives. So there's this thing called bridging algorithms. And the idea is, like, you can kind of lump people based on their history of reading into, you know, right or left politically. And what you can do is look for articles that actually resonate with both rather than just deepen the divide. And this is well studied. It's actually used on Twitter today on X, ironically, Kara, for their community notes product. That's how they decide which community notes actually get shown, because otherwise you would have people on the right doing community notes, correcting the lefties and the lefties correcting the righties, right? So, like, the way it can be applied in mass to news and information is by noticing that certain things have a bias, not in terms of content, but who they resonate with.
Yeah.
And then finding content that brings people together. We're far too small and early right now for a lot of this to make sense.
Is anybody doing that, Kevin?
I haven't heard of anyone else even considering it.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, what's funny, Kara, is it's actually not hard, meaning technically it's not hard. What's hard is to make the choice to do it. Because you are seen as somehow trying to push liberal content to conservatives or conservative content to liberals, you violate one of the groups. And I think that's very hard when you're very large and, you know, you're trying to balance whatever party is in power with legislation against your company and investigations. And so it becomes a very difficult place to be as a large company, but not a difficult place if you're a smaller company trying to grow.
It's antithetical, though, to what Kara often calls engagement through enragement. You know, like, if you want people, you want to feed the dogs the dog food and you want affirmation instead of information, challenging people's worldview, to me, would work against the whole visceral connection you have to content that makes you stay on the platform, right?
Well, in this case, I'm explaining something slightly different, which is you're looking for content that resonates with both sides. So it actually drives engagement on both sides because people see some common thread in it.
It's commonality.
Yeah.
That's right.
Years ago when AOL started, that's how it started. And the first thing I ever noticed it was when he had a group of quilters who had met on AOL and they had made a quilt of an AOL symbol. And they finally met in person and met him, and they felt like they knew him. And it was so positive because these were people so different from each other that just liked to quilt, and they managed to create it online. And I remember thinking, this could be used for such good things, and it could be used for such bad things. Like, I could see the opposite. People that like to make bombs and blow up people they don't like.
Or white supremacists.
Yeah. Yo, no, listen, AOL was good for white supremacists early on, too. So connection is what you're talking about.
Well, I'm excited to check out Artifact and use it.
It's great.
I downloaded it.
Appreciate that.
Kevin, thank you so much for doing this. It was really fun to talk to you. Good luck with your latest venture.
Kevin, I'll call you. I'll be in San Francisco soon. We'll walk around the hellscape, which is not a hellscape.
Okay. No, it's actually quite nice.
I feel like you two speak a whole different language than me, but I think I was able to keep up with you two.
You kept up, yeah.
He's a nice guy, isn't he? What do you think?
Quality guy.
Do you think Artifact is going to be successful, Kara?
I think it's hard. Like, it's just hard because people are attracted by terrible things, right? That's the problem. We've been trained in this the internet went a certain way. It's not a good way, but I do believe when I use that or Threads now, I'm very happy and I like it. And so maybe you can change your habits, your bad habits, I guess.
What do you think is going to happen to the news business? I don't want to start this whole conversation.
Oh, it's a long one.
It is a long one. But how do you think it's going to shake out, Kara? I mean, it's just in a really difficult state.
I think it'll be just fine.
You do?
I think there are new economic models that everybody has to get adjusted to, especially in Hollywood, for example, around streaming and cable news. But, I just did an interview with Perry Diller, and I think he's right. These are worldwide distribution networks of information. Still, television is everywhere. And so the question is, how do you get people to engage in the content itself? And maybe we have to stop thinking less about how than the content itself. And I'll give you one example, which I've told this story before, but I was just in a Frontline documentary about Twitter, and I had participated in their previous one when I think they do great work. And so I was doing it, and my phone rang, and my son called, and he said, "What are you doing, Mom?" I said, I'm doing a Frontline interview. And he goes, "I love Frontline." And I said, "Really?" And then he started talking about all the Frontlines he watches. He knew I don't watch it as much as he does. And I put on the speaker because these people are like, look, it's a 21-year-old, loves Frontline. Look at this. And I said to him, "I didn't know you watched PBS." And he said, "I don't watch PBS. Why would I watch PBS? I see it on YouTube." Well, that's a win as far as I'm concerned if we become adaptable to where people are. People are giving up cable for YouTube TV. And so that's where I'm more like, people are not listening. They're not watching. It's just changed. And then the economics have changed. And that's the problem. That's what's happened.
And I think if you build quality, they will come. I do think.
Yes, I do.
I mean, and they might be in smaller numbers because I always say mass media is an oxymoron now.
I think we started with you going to Yahoo. You're a testimony to this, right? You have much more control over your content.
Well, we have a whole different financial model where we work with companies and tell stories often in conjunction with them, because as trust in media and other institutions has declined, trust in companies has increased and employees are demanding it. So we actually, our revenue model is to work with companies for year-long or multiple-year sponsorships and partnerships, really, in good storytelling.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're making as much money. It may not be the big organizations that are, right? Maybe that's what it is. There'll be a whole bunch of media entrepreneurs like yourself, like myself. I'm doing great. I just am not attached to a big, giant ocean liner. It's all. I just have a little speedy little boat, and it does really well.
And you love that. And you love not being beholden to these big corporations.
Yes.
Because nobody tells Kara Swisher what to do.
Nobody tells Katie Couric what to do.
Isn't that awesome, though, Kara?
Yes. We're always like this. This is the way we are. And I think it does appeal to our entrepreneurial natures. And I think any journalist is not entrepreneurial is going to have a harder time going forward. That's my definite feeling. You have to sort of start to think it's okay, like Kevin was talking about, if it's a small business. It doesn't have to be Instagram.
Right.
It's okay. You can do very well with a very small business. You can do very well. And you get to do what you want.
I get a smaller audience than I did when I was at the Today Show. But I also feel like I'm still serving a need,
That's right.
The stuff that I'm doing is reaching people who want it, the people who find it useful.
That's right.
And that makes me feel like I have purpose.
That's correct. That's correct. It's just different. That's all. I don't think I think people are still desperate for information, good information and good news. And not just good news, but news done well. And I think this recent situation in Israel sort of underscores it. People are very confused by bad information and they need good information to make good decisions about what's happening and what to do about it. And that's critical. It remains critical.
Kara, I'm going to let you go because if you keep talking, you're never going to get your voice back.
No, Katie, I never take a break. I never take a break like you. You're my hero, Katie. You never take a break, do you?
I like working.
I know you do. You're good at it.
Kara, thank you for being my plus one. This was so fun.
No problem.
Let's do it again.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you have a question for me, a subject you want us to cover, or you want to share your thoughts about how you navigate this crazy world, reach out. You can leave a short message at 609-512-5505, or you can send me a DM on Instagram. I would love to hear from you. Next Question is a production of iHeartMedia and Katie Couric Media. The executive producers are me, Katie Couric, and Courtney Litz. Our supervising producer is Ryan Martz. And our producers are Adriana Fazio and Meredith Barnes. Julian Weller composed our theme music. For more information about today's episode or to sign up for my newsletter, Wake Up Call, go to the description in the podcast app or visit us at katiecouric.com. You can also find me on Instagram and all my social media channels. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.